This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Look, we've all been there when we've had to make a tough decision in a short amount of time. I mean, if you're trying to go out and get tickets to a concert or to a football game, and it's last minute, you're trying to get the best deal, you don't know where to look, and you ultimately end up on a decision that's a little bit lackluster. Well, our friends at ZipRecruiter take that out of the hiring process. When you want the best, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. I mean, ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for that position. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
This is the GM Shuffle.
Where's the art of team building? And I think that's really what you have to judge is, are we building the team in the right manner to where it'll allow us to build a championship level?
You're listening to the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. Here is Femi Abebefe.
Welcome to another edition of the GM Shuffle with Michael Lombardi, presented by DraftKings and VSiN. I'm your host, Femi Abebefe. Michael, you were out here in Las Vegas this past weekend. What was the favorite thing you did?
Actually, the favorite thing I did is I went to go see Michael Bublé with Millie. And I mean, it was incredible. I didn't really know. I mean, I liked his Christmas stuff, but the whole venue, the whole vibe over at the Resort World was incredible. And he put on a hell of a show. And, you know, it was fun engaging with the audience. I think what I learned from watching him was how genuinely nice this guy. If this guy's an asshole, Femi, I'm going to be really pissed off. Like I left there thinking, man, this is a really cool guy. I mean, he's like a really good guy. You know, he's friendly, taking pictures with everybody, doing selfies, you know, kind of was going through the crowd. It was great. I mean, it was a hell of a thing. And then the other thing was, you know, obviously meeting everybody was fun to do that, because I never get out there and be around all the technical people, the Miguel, the Kevins, all those people that I don't see on a daily basis. I hear, but I don't see. So that was fun. And then being able to see my son, obviously, and spend some time over at the Raiders. It was weird. I went to the Raiders facility. That was probably the weirdest thing of all.
Yeah, I was going to say, you give us some little intel on what the Las Vegas Raiders are doing out there in Henderson. But, Michael, we live in a post-draft world now. And as always, for our listeners, subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Tweet at Michael, at M. Lombardi, NFL, at Femi Abebefe is where you can find me. Producer Stephen Bond, as usual, on the ones and twos. And you said, oh, my gosh. What was your takeaway from this weekend of the NFL draft?
Well, the whole thing is backwards, right? So, like, the whole grade thing is based on – it's self-indulgent. It's based on what the person doing the grading thought. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like they're taking the test and they have all the answers, but they could be taking the wrong test. Like, it's all based on what if you did something that they think is worthwhile to do, right? You know, like Malik Willis, they thought was worthwhile to pick in the 6th pick. Go through every mock. I mean, you know, all these guys had Malik Willis. I mean, for basically 7 hours, you know, you saw Malik Willis as the top-rated player on Mel's board. I mean, so naturally, whoever took him was going to get an A++, right? So these grades are like they're so self-indulgent and they're so wrong. Like, it's just based on what that guy thought, and there's margin for error. Look, nobody's perfect in picking players, me included, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody's perfect, but all of a sudden these grades act like that's perfection. And what it does is it creates a narrative, it creates a false narrative at times because we never go back. Let's just think about the Raiders, right? So they trade Khalil Mack and get all those draft picks.
Yep.
When you put those draft picks in there, they got panned for the trade, didn't they? They were a great trade.
Yeah.
Got a great trade. Chicago paid a lot. The Raiders got some great pick. They didn't make any of them work. What's the grade on that draft? What's the grade on that trade now? Deep minus? F?
I think F because they didn't pick up any of those guys' fifth-year options. They had three first-round picks. They had the first-rounder for Amari Cooper that they got from Dallas Cowboys. None of those guys got their fifth-year option picked up this past week.
No. So, like, that's all Fs. So my point is like, you can't really judge it. And if you pick, you know, if you pick Cole Strang too early from Tennessee Chattanooga, you got a D. You know, and in the write-up, people say, well, you can, you know, I mean, why can't you attack Belichick? Sure, you can say you disagree with the pick. That doesn't mean he's wrong, and that doesn't mean you're right, just like me. You know, if I were Atlanta, I would have picked Drake London. I think that's the wrong pick. Do I like the player? I'm okay on the player, but I think in terms of team building, when I look at Atlanta's team, they got an A for the draft, by the way. You know, when I look at Atlanta's team, like, how are these guys going to ever – how are they going to ever win five games next year? Like, none of these players that they drafted are going to have an impact on their team, particularly on defense. I mean, particularly on defense. You know, they take a third-round outside linebacker. They take an inside linebacker. They take a second-round outside – I mean, like, who's going to stop the run? They were the worst run defense in all of football last year. Their defense – they gave up 400 and some points. Like, how can they get an A when they did nothing to help their team in terms of building the franchise? Like, it makes no – that's, to me, is there's two separate issues. There's the player and then the building of the team.
It's interesting because value is always the word that's tossed around, but value is in the eye of the beholder, as you're saying. Like, if you like this player as your 10th-rated player on the board and they're available in the round three, you're going to give that pick an A versus if you think that player should be the 100th-rated player and they're in round three, you're like, okay, that's like a B-minus, C-plus type of value pick there. It's always in the eye of the beholder, and I get the grades from a process standpoint, but to an extent, like, you also have to get the results as well, and you really can't fully grade. You can grade the process, but you can't fully grade the pick until we get 2 to 3 years down the line here with these draft grades. Because, I mean, you mentioned it. The Baltimore Ravens, they're going to get their A every single year.
I called their A before they even started. Like,
they didn't have to pick players.
I called it. Oh, they got great – everybody says they got great players. Although Kyle Hamilton, can he play on the third level? I mean, you talk to people in the league that know – and they think the guy isn't in the box safety. That's in vogue. That's not even in play anymore. You know, so like, and they got an A because Kyle Hamilton was viewed as this great pick by everybody. Mm-hmm. But look, everyone's entitled to an opinion. I am not disputing that. Everyone's a scout. I'm not disputing that. You can do it. I think I have great respect for the guys that do all the work. They watch the tape. They write up all these players, you know, after the draft. I mean, they're writing columns. I respect all that. However, that doesn't mean they're right. Like, has anybody gone back and created a look at what their grades were as it translated? Like, for example, do you wonder? It hit me on Sunday or Saturday. Maybe it was Friday. I was watching after you and I did our hit. I'm sitting there. Now I know why. No network has anybody on the main desk that's actually done the job of drafting. You can say, well, Daniel Jeremiah was in the league. Yeah, Daniel Jeremiah was in the league. He was this area scout.
He
never ran a draft. He never organized a draft. He never led people. He never did any of that. I'm not dismissing Daniel Jeremiah. I think he's a wonderful person. I think he's great, and I think he's good at what he does. I'm not disputing that. I'm saying he's never had any authority. You say, well, Lewis Riddick did. No. Lewis Riddick's never made one draft selection in his life. He's never organized a draft or run a scouting department. Meanwhile, they got Scott Pioli sitting in the back over there and on NFL Network, and you don't even see him. He's run drafts. Like, but the reason they don't put him on the desk is because he could explain something that would dispute the people that they're trying to make into the experts. What we're getting in the coverage is they're trying to make the people that are the mock drafters or whatever, they're trying to make them the experts. If you put an expert on there, it would dispute what they're saying. And so there, it's just a continuation of that.
Well, I thought one thing that you tweeted out there, and it was, I believe, on Friday afternoon when a lot of people were talking about the quarterbacks dropping in this class. And you were saying that, hey, they're not dropping. And we've talked about it a number of times on this podcast for weeks now that the league doesn't see these quarterbacks as first-round caliber players. These are more second- and third-round guys. And we didn't even see a quarterback go in the second round. What did you make of that when you were watching at home there or in the hotel here in Vegas when you saw, hey, these quarterbacks keep falling. Like, what's going on with Ritter? What's going on with Willis? Why do they keep falling down the board?
What I said to myself, you dumb shit, just pay attention. just believe what you believe. Quit listening to all the other shit. Like I got trapped into the kid from Carson Strong from Reno, right?
Yeah.
I was told by somebody reliably that I trust that, you know, the Steelers, if they didn't go quarterback in the first round, they would pick him in the second. And usually this person that told me that is really reliable when it comes to Pittsburgh. They didn't even pick him in the seventh. They picked another quarterback. So my point is, like, just trust your own evaluation, because there's too much misinformation out there. Like, and I knew the quarterbacks were not any good. I don't care how many guys were. I mean, there was one draft expert from NFL Network that had five guys going in the first round, five quarterbacks going in the first. Like, how do you come back from that? Like, how do you, like, what are you saying to people? You had five going in the first round. Like, there was a time when that number was 3.5. And I kept saying it was, there's no way. Like, I'm just saying, to me, trust your eyes. You know, Red Auerbach had a saying, you know, I get my information from looking, not from talking. I think that's true. And the draft is all talk. It's all talk. Mm-hmm. And there's bad information out there. And the evaluate the evaluator. I mean, it comes back down to that.
And I think the New England Patriots are kind of the perfect team to exemplify that and to show why one team likes to zig while the others may zag, because you mentioned the Cole Strange draft pick. It got mocked on Thursday night. Everyone says, wow, why would you take Cole Strange in the first round? This is a third round caliber guy. Even Les Snead and Sean McVay are laughing about it. But the Patriot way, that becomes a thing because they're willing to do the things that other teams are unwilling to do. They're willing to go left when most people are going right. Is that the read on this one? Because Belichick, he doesn't really regard the wisdom of the crowd. He's going to go off of his own specific board there.
Yeah, and plus when he says, hey, look, I mean, he obviously had intel that somebody else liked Cole Strange. I mean, he had intel on that. So I don't, you know, he's not making it up. You know, like, mm-hmm. One thing about Bill, nobody, I mean, I think the one thing you could say about Belichick is he appreciates value more than anything. I mean, he sat there and waited for Mac Jones. He wasn't going to trade away value for it, and he ended up getting him. So, look, does this mean that Strange is going to be a good player? I don't know. You know, I know that he did his homework on him, you know, that he did his due diligence, and that he believed that somebody was going to take him sooner rather than later. And so he picked him. And you know, everybody says, well, they picked him too early. It only takes one team. You know, it only takes one team to like another guy. And what is the difference? I mean, we see it all the time. These guys that are supposed to be the slam dunk pick ends up not being the right pick. So I'm not making excuses for him, but I think he's done his homework. He's looked through it. And as you said, he does it. The guy's a 4-year starter. You know, there was a clip on, I think, Peter King's column today of him getting beat by the third round pick. It was a 1-on-1 pass rush drill. It was a 1-on-1 drill. Those drills always go in favor of the defensive line. Rarely do those win. I mean, that's one play out of how many plays? I mean, seriously, that's kind of unfair to create that narrative.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of the detractors, and I think it's a fair criticism, I will say that Belichick doesn't have the most sterling draft record. They've taken some shots, they've missed some, but everybody has missed some shots. I mean, N'Keal Harry in the first round, that's one that a lot of people will point to with a missed shot, especially with the other receivers that went after him in that draft. But that's the draft. It's the inexact science here. And the fact that I always tip my cap to people who are willing to do the uncomfortable thing, the people who are willing to kind of march to their own beat, because I think that's ultimately how you win big. It's hard to win big when you're just following the masses there, in my opinion, at least. It's just, I see where he's coming from when he kind of goes off of the beaten path, if you will.
Right. And I mean, he obviously spent time with the player. You know, he's worked out the guy. They've evaluated him athletically, and they feel like he can come in and start. I mean, if they felt like he's a starter at the 29th pick and they're going to get 5 years out of a starting offensive lineman, then, you know, then he's going to be worth the pick at a cheap number. Mm-hmm. And if he's an above-the-line starter and he can play guard, center, or tackle, he can play anywhere, then he gets above-the-line player. Only time's going to tell who's right. It doesn't today it doesn't mean that Mel's right or Todd McShay's right or Daniel or anybody's right or I'm right. It doesn't really matter. It matters how they play. Remember, it doesn't matter where we pick them, because The picking is subjective. It's based on someone's value. Who's created the value?
Yep.
I say this all. I told this to a head coach the other day. You know, and he was complaining about how everything gets topsy-turvy. And I said, here, usually what happens in drafts is from August until January, the draft is kind of controlled by the college scouting department and the college scouting directors, and they don't spend enough time watching pro football. They watch college football, and they do a good collect the data on college. But once the pro football evaluators that understand the league get involved, that's when we start to see players move up and down the board. They're not moving up and down the board because they ran a great 40 or because somebody just they actually are now being graded based on the league. They're being graded based on inside-out scouting, not outside-in. And if you want to be a great college scout, you got to learn the league. You got to spend as much time on pro football as you do on college. You got to spend all of May, June, July, every minute you have studying the league, what's playing in the league, studying the schemes of the league, studying how people utilize personnel. And then apply that when you go on the road. If you don't do that, you're just scouting outside. And then all of a sudden, that's why players move. They don't move because of some subjective area. Mm-hmm. And if you don't know the league well enough, if you don't know, hey, this is what Kevin Stefanski wants in an offensive lineman. If you don't know what Bill Callahan would want, or you don't know what the scheme of the 34 defense, the way Pittsburgh run it is, how can you really fit the player to that team? You got to know that.
We don't know who's going to be right. We don't know who's going to be wrong, but I do want your opinion on the other side. We're going to discuss who did well, who did not so well in the 2022 NFL Draft.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm going to kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
All right, Michael, we're not going to really hand out any draft grades because that's to be determined later on down the line. But I want you to almost explain to me who you thought did well this weekend based off of their team building and their process. So is there a team that immediately comes to mind when you think about that?
Well, I like what the Giants did because I think whenever you start rebuilding a franchise and you start with the offensive and defensive lines, I think that's the right play. I know that's not popular. I know everybody wants to draft receivers, but I think that's the right play. I mean, as opposed to the Jets, who take two good players, but to me, you know, the Jets run a lot of cover three. They're not a man-to-man mm-hmm. team. Maybe they'll change because of the corner that they selected, you know, in Sauce Gardner, and then they take another receiver. You know, they put all this money in Corey Davis. They drafted a receiver in the second. Now they got another receiver. Like, at some point, when are they going to fix their right tackle in George Fant? So for me, I'm watching the teams that what I feel like utilize team building the effective way. What's the most important positions? What can't we afford to get in the open market? I mean, you're Atlanta. You've got a really bad team. You can't protect your quarterback. You've already lost one quarterback because he got sacked more than anybody. Meanwhile, you're still drafting receivers. Like, at some point, how are we going to get the ball to him? Like, where's the art of team building? And I think that's really what you have to judge is, are we building the team in the right manner to where it'll allow us to build a championship level? We know we need a quarterback. I mean, that's pretty obvious, right? So that's not hard to figure out. But all the other pieces have to kind of tie together to see what happens. And when you have a glaring hole at offensive line, or when you get sacked as much as Atlanta quarterbacks have, you say, well, how do you do that? Well, you say, well, we drafted Lindstrom in the first round. We drafted McLeod McCary in the first round. We drafted Jake Matthews in the first round. We've spent a lot of resources, but they're not any good.
Yep.
Your quarterback's getting killed. So how do you, you know, just because you drafted them there, I think if you're a Giant fan, you have to rejoice that they didn't extend, they didn't pick up the fifth-year option on Daniel Jones. You got to celebrate that as like, wow, this is great.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because the New York Jets, in comparison to the Giants going inside out, Jets going outside in. And I was surprised by that, by the New York Jets brass. I mean, Joe Douglas comes over from the Philadelphia Eagles front office. Robert Saleh, we know his history with pass rush. And Douglas has been an offensive line guy. He always loves those trenches. And the fact that he passed on all the offensive linemen, he even passed on Kayvon Thibodeau, a guy that they were linked to quite a bit throughout the draft process, that surprised me a little bit. And Sauce Gardner, people love him. But for corners to go 3 and 4, I thought it was a little surprising based off of the old linemen that were available on the board at the time.
You know, me too. If I were Joe Douglas, I would have taken a defensive lineman and an offensive lineman. And I would have just said, okay, for us to beat Buffalo, we got to get Josh Allen on the ground. Look, mm-hmm. I love receivers as much. Now, he took obviously the edge guy at the bottom of the first, you know, so, you know, that gives him a chance to maybe Jermaine Johnson, who they had in the top 10, so we moved up to get him. But to me, you know, if you get Thibodeau and then if you come back and take another offensive lineman and now you fix your right tackle position, you know, at 10, well, I don't think there would have been one there. The problem was with Garrett, with Cross gone, the offensive line was but you could have started out by taking an offensive lineman and then come back and take, to me, it was about fixing the two lines. And I think I would have done that more than what they ended up doing. They might get good players. I have a hard time understanding how Seattle takes Richard Sherman in the fifth round overall. San Francisco's really never invested high picks of top three pick. Salah came from an organization that put all their resources in the defensive line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. And guess what the 49ers did with their first pick in the second round? They took another pass rusher, Drake Jackson out of USC. Like, the 49ers have this build of just keep swinging at these rushers to get the quarterbacks down. And Saleh coming from that, it was a surprising that he deviated from that path and went with Ahmad Sauce Gardner. Now, Sauce Gardner could turn into an all pro, but just based off of Saleh's identity and what their philosophy has been, where he came from, it felt like he would go pass rush. The Eagles, I thought, was another interesting draft because they drafted our favorite player, Jordan Davis, there with the 13th overall pick, the guy that people thought that maybe he's just a nose tackle. The Eagles clearly saw more.
You know, they did, and I think what they saw was somebody that they could line up next to Fletcher Cox, line up next to Javon Hargrave, who was outstanding, right? And they still got the kid they drafted in the third round, Milton Johnson. You know, they still have him over there at left in inside. So, you know, to me, the Eagles went to the Super Bowl and won a Super Bowl in 2017 because of their defensive front. Milton Williams, the kid's name is. Mm-hmm. So they did that. They won that because of that, and I think they went back to that. They get Dean, which was a great get for them in the third round. But Dean, I'm told, has a torn pec by some teams. Now, I don't quite understand this because torn pecs are kind of like being pregnant. You either are or you're not, right? You either have a tour or you don't, you know, and so you either got to repair it or you don't. And so, obviously, a lot of teams had Dean off their board at some point because you can repair it. He's going to come back and play. He just might not play next year. So what? Right? So what? If you got a really good player and you wait a year, what do you care for?
Yeah, I mean, especially in the second and third rounds, because I was watching on Friday and I even tweeted, I was like, man, like, N'Kobe Dean's medicals must be like resemblance of a middle-aged man. Like, why is he falling this far down the board? And there was reports that were coming out in the broadcast saying that, okay, it's this, he didn't get surgery, and teams are concerned about the fact that he didn't get any surgery, which is a curious decision, the fact that he didn't get surgery. Maybe that would have put him out for even longer. He thinks that he can play through this thing and it can heal naturally. But Dean was arguably the best player on one of the best defenses we've ever seen in college football.
No doubt. And you know, they got a hell of a value in the third round, and so he misses a year. You know, let's put this in perspective. How much playtime do these guys get? I mean, everybody thinks they're winning the Super Bowl today. You know, everybody thinks they got the best team in the league. They're going to win the Super Bowl. But most of these rookies aren't going to make any immediate impact on the team. You know, most of them won't. Most of them will learn what to do. I mean, there's not going to be very many Mekhi Parsons that come in the league like he did. They're going to contribute. Their next year, the 2023 year, is going to be the year they got to take the huge leap. You know, and so that's where you'll see the jump. But you know, so like, why not wait a year? If you can get a player like Dean in the third round, to me, it was a good value.
Let's stay in Pennsylvania. The Pittsburgh Steelers, they had the headline pick of the first round with Kenny Pickett, number 20. He falls all the way to them. They get the Pitt alum staying in Pittsburgh. But after that Pickett selection, I thought they made some pretty good picks with the wide receivers. George Pickens out of Georgia, Calvin Austin out of Memphis there. It was Kevin Colbert's last ride as a general manager. He was a little emotional giving his post-draft press conference, but I thought Kevin Colbert left this organization in a pretty good spot with this 2022 draft.
You know, I mean, Kevin always does a good job, and I think Kevin does it. Last year, he took a lot of crap for taking Najee Harris. And so, look, he's taking a chance on Pickett. You know, he comes in there. The guy's got – certainly he's got the ability to do a lot of things, whether he's a starter. I don't see him as a starter. Kevin saw him as a starter. That's obviously where he goes. I don't particularly think that's going to last. But, you know, with Trubisky there, I do think that the way Pickett plays, the way Pickett understands football, I think he'll pick it up. Rather, he'll compete, I think, in his rookie year. He's ready to compete right now. He'll learn the protections. He'll be able to compete. And if Trubisky turns the ball over, I could see them making that move. Long run, I don't. But I have great respect for Kevin. I think Kevin does a great job. He had a wonderful career there. I've known Kevin since the day I met him at Baylor University in 1985. We were both working out a player down there. Wow. And so he's always been a diligent, hard worker. And he understands the art of team building. And, I mean, they've done a good job of fixing their receiver room with their coaching. They develop players. You know, what happened, Fem? What happened with – I thought Mike Tomlin loved Malik Willis. I thought he loved him.
They went to dinner together in Mobile, Alabama. I mean, we were led to believe there were two peas in a pod.
I thought they loved him.
They must have loved Pickett a little bit more.
Obviously, you know, and then, you know, then I was told they love Curtis Strong, and they take us to the South Dakota quarterback in the last pick of the round of the seventh round. So, you know, I think should we all remind ourselves next year when we do the pod, don't believe anything come draft time. Like, don't believe anything. Look, we thought Thibodeau, it's interesting. Thibodeau was telling everybody, and everybody at Circa, he had a draft party at Circa. He was telling everybody he was going to Detroit. He was convinced he was going to Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
He was so convinced he was going to Detroit. You know, it was like fait accompli. There's no doubt. And what happened? Detroit took all of about a minute to turn the Hutchinson card in.
We were doing the broadcast together, and I was like looking down. I was like, oh, the pick is already in. And it was
wasted no time at all.
Like about a minute and a half, I think, to make that decision.
Yeah, I mean, they made it was like it was none of it, you know? And so it just to me is – I think to me it's a commentary on nobody's it's too high stakes poker to let information out. You can't really afford to do it. You really can't. So you just have to be able to just block everything out and really focus on what you think the team's going to do in January and don't let the noise bother you in April.
Which draft did you not like? I mean, you mentioned Atlanta, their process of the team building. They go with Drake London. They're another pass catcher in the top 10. But was there another team that you didn't like? Because I have a team in mind.
Go ahead. You go.
I'm a Justin Fields fan, and I was hoping the Chicago Bears would surround him with some offensive linemen, maybe some wide receivers. And they eventually took a wide receiver. But there are two picks in the second round. You get Kyler Gordon, who's I'm a Washington Husky fan. I watched Kyler Gordon play quite a bit. He's really athletic. I question some of his instincts at cornerback, but super athletic, has a high ceiling. And then they take the Penn State guy, Jaquan Briskerew, another really good athlete out of Penn State. But I wanted to see him get an O-lineman. I mean, I don't see how Fields is going to be protected. The receiver they drafted, Velus Jones, I think he might be signing up for an AARP card soon there, 25 years old before the year even starts. Like, I thought the first draft here for Ryan Poles out of Chicago, questionable at best, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, again, you know, we're talking about offensive and defensive linemen. He don't take any of them. You know, he's going to come back with Tevon Jenkins at left tackle. Can he do it? Whitehair at left guard. You know, they signed Lucas Patrick from Green Bay. I mean, Dakota Dozier from Minnesota. And then they got the kid they drafted in the fifth round. I mean, this could be one of the worst offensive lines in football. It could improve. It could improve with coaching, but you're right. I mean, it's not necessarily. And then defensive line, right? So the key to their team was Akeem Hicks and Khalil Mack, right? Now Robert Quinn was sensational last year. There's no denying that.
Yep.
But where are they going to get it? It's going to put a lot of pressure on the coordinator to help it. I mean, are they going to be able to handle the run with Justin Jones and Tonga inside and Blackson? I mean, these guys, are they good enough? We'll see. I agree with you. I think, to me, it gets away from the art of team building. You know the one the pick that I thought was hilarious? We talked about this on the Lombardi line. I didn't think it was hilarious. I think it was a reflection of the NFC North, right? So, you know, Cincinnati has all the talk went to Ja'Marr Chase, right?
Yep.
Great player, all that. But really, at the end of the day, Chase was fabulous, and he made all the plays. But the guy that really got him over the top was Evan McPherson. He didn't miss a kick. He was dynamic, and he was automatic, right? And come playoff time, he was he truly was Mariano Rivera. He was closing shit out, right?
Yeah.
And so you're the Cleveland Browns. You missed 6 field goals last year inside of the 40-yard line. And you got to play McPherson, and you got to play the great Justin Tucker, who don't miss. They don't miss, right? And so what do you got to do? You got a guy that you know misses. So you go ahead and spend a 4th-round pick, which I think is the right pick, on Cade York. Now, some people say the difference between a great kicker and a good kicker analytically in the NFL is 1 missed kick or 2, mm-hmm. probably. But when you're in Cleveland, Ohio, and you're kicking where the wind's swirling, where it's a problem, and you miss 6 kicks inside of 50-yard line. He made every kick. McLaughlin made every kick outside of 50. He missed 6 inside of 40 to 49. You have to improve. We'll see if York can do it. A Southern kid, but so was McPherson. He was from Florida. And he was able to kick in Cincinnati effectively. I think that's a significant. Now, you talk about a guy who can make a difference on a team. There's the guy.
And you think about, I mean, Justin Tucker is a Texas guy, too. Like, he played in Texas, and somehow those guys have adapted to that AFC North climate. We'll see if Cade York can do the same. There were a lot of trades that we saw after the top 10 of the draft. On the other side, we'll talk about all the wheeling and dealing we saw over the 3 days of the 2022 NFL draft.
Look, we've all been there when we've had to make a tough decision in a short amount of time. I mean, if you're trying to go out and get tickets to a concert or to a football game, and it's last minute, you're trying to get the best deal, you don't know where to look, and you ultimately end up on a decision that's a little bit lackluster. Well, our friends at ZipRecruiter take that out of the hiring process. When you want the best, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. I mean, ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for that position. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Michael, I'm just, you know, we got all the monitors here in our studio where we're taping this podcast. And
great studio, by the way.
Fantastic.
I mean, how nice is that Circa one? Holy heck, that's, you know, when you got Mitch and Pauly, that's like top shelf there.
This is the real deal.
Derek Stevens did a hell of a job there.
It is absolutely the real deal. I mean, the sports book in the background. It is awesome.
Hey, there's nothing like the sports book down there. I mean, that is really, I mean, Stadium Swim is very, very interesting. There's no denying it. You know, what shocks me is how people just go, I mean, $350 for a bottle of Stoli and nobody blinks an eye. Like, there's 3 bottles coming out. Like, it's amazing the party time they have down there. But, that is incredible. If you ever go to Vegas and you're a sports fan, you got to go to the Circa and watch games there.
It's absolutely amazing. A bucket list type of experience here for any sort of sports fan or even a fan. If you just like a good party, you mentioned Stadium Swim, Casa doing business up there. It is well worth the price of admission. But with the monitors that we have in the studio, we had one of the daytime talk shows in the sports world on there. And they were asking the question, is Bill Belichick losing his touch in New England? And I couldn't help but laugh just seeing that on the Kyron.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's going to be like, okay, Skip, I'm sure, has watched no college. I mean, he's evaluated no players. Like, a buddy of mine who's a Patriot fan calls me up and says, we had a shitty draft. I said, how many of those players did you watch? I didn't watch any of them. But everybody says it's shitty. Like, how do you know? This is what happens, the narrative. You think Skip watched, Cole Strang at Texas Tech? No, of course he didn't. You think Shannon did? Of course he didn't. Of course. You know, and now they're going to question a guy who's losing his touch who's won 6 Super Bowls. You know, I was talking about this on air. You know, his whole process is, like when that Les Snead conversation was going on and Les was making fun of the pick, or if they think he was, but maybe he wasn't. There's some debate here now. You know, I mean, like, I promise you, Belichick's written up more players in the last year than probably most directors have written up over the last 5 years. Like, he writes up every player. Like, he grades every single player, writes them up in the computer, goes through. Like, he'll start, what's today, Monday?
Yep.
My sense of it is he will start probably Wednesday. He'll start working on the Big 12. And he'll start going through all the players in the Big 12. He'll start with a team, let's say Oklahoma, and he'll watch Oklahoma's offense against all the Big 12 defensive players. And he'll watch both sides. Take him a while, but he'll watch both sides. Then he'll go to another tape and watch both sides, continuing with Oklahoma offense, right? Mm-hmm. And then he'll watch that, and he'll continue with Oklahoma until he gets through six tapes of Oklahoma's offense against this. So now he's got a sense of what's going on defensively, and he knows all the Oklahoma offensive players. Okay, writes them up. Now he goes and he continues. Now we'll go to maybe he goes to Oklahoma. He'll go to Nebraska. He'll go to Texas Tech offense. So now he knows their offense against the same teams that he was watching against Oklahoma. So he'll do that. It'll take him about 10 days to go through the whole Big 12, right? He'll do every team. Mm-hmm. And he'll write up all the players. So then he has a really good idea on the conference. 2 weeks. Then he'll go to the Pac-12. Do the same thing. Then he'll go to the ACC. Do the same thing. He'll leave the Southeast Conference alone because it takes too long. You're gonna need a month to go through that because there's too many good teams, you know. And so, but all through it. So by the time he goes to Nantucket in the summertime, he's probably written up 500 players.
Wow.
So it's not like I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying he's putting the work in. The process is there. So if the process, so if you're gonna say he's losing it, then understand how he does it, right? You got to understand how he does it. If you could argue that you don't like the pick if you put as much time in on evaluating the pick. Like Mel doesn't like the pick. Okay, Mel, watch the guy. He doesn't like the pick. That's fine. He's entitled to his opinion. Doesn't mean he's right. Why is Mel right and Belichick not?
That's a good question. And it sounds like a grueling process, honestly. Like to go through one conference after 2 weeks and then to continue to do that. That is a grueling process, but that's kind of a peek behind the curtains of what it's like to be an NFL evaluator and an NFL general manager, someone who makes these sorts of decisions. The draft is something that 2023, they're already working on it now. And it's hard to believe. Like we're catching our breath just recapping 2022, but these front offices, these college scouting
they're
directors.
They're working on it right now.
Yeah, they're already working on 2023 right now.
And when you're watching 22 tape, you're seeing a guy, oh, my God, look at that guy from here. Yep. Like, I'll tell you a guy we screwed up on. Like, he and I were doing, when I was there, this is what we would do we would start this May, and this is what we would do. And we were watching, we were in the Big 12 watching Texas. And there was this running back from UTEP. And he was unbelievable, running away from everybody. He had a bing, bada boom. He was doing everything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is really a good player. And he wasn't even on but because we were doing Texas defense, he showed up. So you write the report up on him. His name's Aaron Jones. Wow. And he's only a sophomore. He's only a sophomore when we're watching him. He had a long, he had a 70-yard run against Texas. So you run, but then he loses, and he gets hurt. And then I left, and they didn't get back on him. Like he kind of slipped through the cracks, mm-hmm. and he goes in the fifth round. I can remember I was doing my pod with Tate Frazier, and I'm like, Aaron Jones is the best player in the fifth. Not even close. Wow. And it turned out to be true. Because, when you start doing when you do the conferences, you learn every player from freshman to senior. Like if I went back into the NFL, I would take 60 schools and treat them like pro schools. I would make sure the scouts had 10 schools. They wrote up every player at those 10 schools, 12 schools, 15 schools, from freshman to the senior. So you have a long-standing report. You have a freshman report, just like they're a pro player, and you're seeing they're getting better. Are they And then you're able to monitor it. If you just do it hit and miss, come in, okay, you don't really understand the history of what the player's developed into.
Yeah, that's that context that's needed when evaluating a player over the course of their college career. You can't just show up in their final year of eligibility and be like, okay, hey, let's watch this player. The draft I thought was interesting Thursday night. We were doing the broadcast, and I asked you, I was like, hey, are we going to see some trades? And you were like, well, I mean, these teams, they might not want to come up for these players because this is not a blue chip type of draft. This is a draft where you're looking to hit some doubles and just round out your roster. And through the top 10, that's kind of how things held serve. But then after that top 10, all hell broke loose. We saw a number of trades for veteran wide receivers. We saw trades, teams moving up for certain draft picks. Were there any trades where it was Thursday or maybe even Friday that really stood out to you? And we can kind of go from there.
You know, I thought the Minnesota trade was strange. If you run the chart, I think they got the value, but it was to me in this draft, it was a long way to go from 12 to 32. Like, I felt like that was a long, like, that removed you from a lot of players. So, but obviously his board in Minnesota was such that he didn't really see Jameson Williams as a 6-0, a 67. Say he has Jameson Williams rated a 7-0 player on his board, and he trades away from a 7-0, which is an above-the-line starter, elite starter. Right, so he trades away from that. It goes all the way down to 32. He knows he's getting at 32. He's going to get a potential starter. He knows he's going to get a potential starter. So by doing that, you know, now all of a sudden he knows he's losing. So the value of the trade has to make up for that. And I don't think it did. That's why typically when you see 20 moves down, it always involves a next year's one, because next year is such that you feel like it'll justify it. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a strange trade. I really did. That one I wasn't sure of. We'll see if it works out. I didn't. I think what happened was once the corners went there, there was only one corner left. Why Kansas traded up to get him. Yeah. And then once the receiver went, there went receiver back to back. Everybody panicked. Because that's why, you know, everybody went nuts on our broadcast. And, you know, after we got off the air, when Green Bay didn't take a receiver, everybody went crazy. How could they not take a receiver? Well, there was nobody left.
Yeah, what they want them to do. Yeah. And it's interesting how this comes together for the Minnesota Vikings. Is this something that they had worked out prior to the draft with Detroit? Or is it a panic phone call? Because based on the compensation they got back, it seemed like it was a panic phone call of, oh, crap, we don't like anybody on the board. Let's bail.
Yeah, I think they got to the point where once I think they wanted something that wasn't there. And it obviously wasn't a receiver. It could have been a corner. Mm-hmm. It could have been an offensive tackle. You know, it could have been anything. But once, to me, what happened there was their level of first of an upper echelon based on the pick, based on the value of that pick, didn't match the player they had graded on the board. So they traded back to the cluster where it was more, where they had more players that fit what they did. Whether that's the right decision or not, that remains to be seen.
Yeah. To go from 12 to 32 while having to also give up a second round pick, that doesn't compute in my head. I'm like, this should have been a first round pick for the Vikings, but clearly
that's what I thought, right?
They were desperate. I mean, that's the only explanation I can come up with, is that they were absolutely desperate.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. And but you know, look, that when you do the numbers on the trade value chart, it works out. But to me, you're taking yourself out of so many players. But again, I don't know Minnesota's board, so they may not have had enough players graded up there to justify 12. And so they basically took that. We'll see if it works out. You know, when you make these trades, well, nobody does this, but when you make these trades, you have to put the players' names in after the trade. You're not really trading picks. You're trading players. Nobody does this, right? So, you know, like I would wish the broadcast would say, okay, you know, the Jets traded into the first round to get John, to get the rusher from Florida State, and this is what it cost them. This is the cost effect of it. You know, it cost them this player and that player. That's the trade. It isn't the players become the picks become players. We never focus on that. The Raiders got three number ones for Khalil Mack. They got nobody for Khalil Mack. They gave away Khalil Mack. They gave him away.
Yeah. Were the Arizona Cardinals, were they desperate for a wide receiver? Is that what sparked the Hollywood Brown trade?
I think they're desperate to recreate Lollipop Land. I mean, what else can you do? I mean, like, seriously, how many more little guys can you get? I thought Isabella was supposed to be the guy, right? I thought he was supposed to be, you know, the guy that comes in and fits for them at 5'08", 6". He comes in. Okay, so you got Isabella, 5'08", 6". You got Rondell Moore, who looked last year like he could be a good player at 5'9". Mm-hmm. So now you add Hollywood, who, you know, Hollywood's been a good player, but Hollywood's not like – to me, his catch radius is small.
Yeah.
His route radius isn't great. I know they played together at Oklahoma, but that doesn't mean anything. It means, like, what are we going to do? What are we going to run? It'll be interesting. I don't know who their competition was for Marquise Brown at the first pick, at a first-round pick. I don't know.
Yeah. It's an interesting offense. DeAndre Hopkins is still out there. They got some – it'd make for a pretty decent 7-on-7 team, I can tell you that. If they
Kyler Murray and all those little receivers. You kind of want to sing Lollipop Land. I mean, you want them to go dancing around, you know. You got the mayor coming out, and he'll hold the decree out there like this and say, okay, here we go. I mean, A.J. Green, I thought he was – I didn't think he had any juice left in him.
Yeah.
I didn't think he had any juice, you know. So I think when you have a little quarterback, you need big receivers. Like, one thing about A.J. Brown going to Philly, I mean, he's great at yards after the catch. And so you're running those RPO stuff, the Oklahoma offense at Philly, you know, you're going to get, you got to get him the ball on the move. Now, can Hurts get him the ball on the move in timing, in rhythm, in the right spot so he can keep running it? That remains to be seen, but it fits the concept.
Do you think this is an open evaluation for Jalen Hurts, or is Howie Roseman essentially building a roster for the next quarterback?
I think he's doing the right thing. He's building a team around the quarterback that he has currently, understanding that he needs more data to truly evaluate. He has to know that when it becomes a passing game, Hurts can't do it. He has to know that by now. He can convince himself otherwise, but it just doesn't. It didn't happen in college, and it's not happening here. When you force him to throw, I mean, to me, Jalen Hurts is the Rudy Gobert of the league. You know, he can play during the regular season, but once it goes postseason, he doesn't have anything. He's taken out of the game, right? I mean, that's what it is. I mean, Hurts is Rudy Gobert. Great season, you know, running the ball, doing all these things. But when it becomes a passing game and I got to throw it in the playoffs to win, I can't do it. Rudy Gobert, I mean, what are you going to do with him? Come playoff time, he doesn't do anything for your team.
Yeah, he gets attacked come playoff time. But Hurts, they've surrounded him with so many weapons. I mean, you're talking about A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, last year's first-round pick, Dallas Goedert, one of the better tight ends in the league. They have a really good offensive line. They got some good running backs led by Miles Sanders. Like, this is an offense that is ready-made, and I don't want to say this is like a make-or-break year for Jalen Hurts in the NFL by any means, because I think he's established himself as an NFL-caliber player. But if he doesn't get it done this year for the Eagles, there's likely going to be a 2023 draft class quarterback that will be on that team next year.
You know, I think this, to me, if you want to bet the Eagles over total, I think it's 9.5 or 9. The one thing you do when you bet overs, you got to make sure they have a backup quarterback. Because if you're down to this, and if they go to Minshew instead of Hurts, I don't think they lose anything. I don't think they would lose anything. So I would lean towards the over here. I think they've improved themselves. Now, defensively, are they going to be good enough at corner? Remains to be seen. Right? Are they going to be able to stop and affect the passer the way they played defense last year, especially when they played against really good passers, whether it was Brady twice, whether it was, you know, Matthew Stafford, was those guys, they struggled. They really struggled. If their rush couldn't get there, they struggled defensively. So, but I like it. I you have to know, Femi, that if it's a passing game and we got to rely on him drop back throwing from the pocket. You know, look, the Eagles want to throw the football, and they settled to run the ball because that's what Hurts can do. Eventually, they're going to get somebody in there that can throw it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's gonna be after the situation with the Philadelphia Eagles, who look like they're going to challenge the Dallas Cowboys to win the division. What did you think about my Cowboys draft there? I mean, Tyler Smith out of Tulsa sounds like he's a little raw, but he's got some athleticism.
Yeah, I mean, what they say that he's going to lead the league in holding. I mean, yeah, you know,
I didn't like that when I heard that about him.
Well, I mean, look, you got to count for coaching, right? You know, put mittens on them. You know, how do you stop an offensive lineman from holding? You know, basically, you know those mittens you take stuff out of the refrigerator, out of the oven with? Put them on. You know, they put mittens in there, and then they can't hold. So you got, you know, there's still an element of teaching here that goes into it, you know? So I don't know Tolbert, the receiver they drafted, but look, the Cowboys, it's all going to me, if you're the Dallas Cowboys, you got to say to yourself, we got to get more out of Zeke because Tony Pollard's really good. Tony Pollard. Yeah. Tony Pollard reminds me, he's not as good a player, but he reminds me of Gale Sayers the way he runs. Everybody thinks Gale Sayers was this loose play, hips. Gale Sayers was a slasher, fly fast, get on an edge, nobody could get him. And that's what Pollard looks like to me.
Yeah, if Zeke can get right, I mean, that's a pretty good tandem in the backfield with Pollard and Zeke. But I mean, based off of what they've lost this offseason, I'm not super optimistic about Dallas heading into 2022, but they've surprised me in the past, and I'm hoping they can do so again here in 2022. Let's take one more quick break, and on the other side, I want to ask you some fun questions about what we saw this weekend in the NFL draft.
The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. I mean, we have a plethora of games to bet on. You can bet on game by game, totals, sides, series props, conference finals, MVP, NBA finals, MVP, whatever you want. DraftKings has it. So all you have to do is download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SHUFFLE. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SHUFFLE only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas. 21 plus age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
All right, Michael, the NFL draft has come and gone, but it was a spectacle here in Las Vegas, not only at the draft experience, but also on television. You've mentioned the draft broadcast from an analysis standpoint, but what did you make of Friday and Saturday? I mean, we saw the Blue Man Group. I thought we were going to see your boy Michael Bublé announce a draft pick as well. I mean, there was all sorts of bells and whistles out here in Sin City.
I mean, they had Sebastian Maniscalco up on the stage. They didn't let the guy talk. I mean, he's the funniest guy in the world, and they don't even let him talk. He's up there looking good. He had two shows that night at 7 and 10 over at the Wind. I mean, they didn't even get a chance to talk. And then you got Ed, I call Marinara, but I think I pronounced his name wrong. I mean, then he thinks it's all about him. Like, who, you know, like, seriously, you're there to help the kid. The kid just got the time of his life, and you're going to start going in a monologue about, you know, about your TV career and your NFL career. Come on, that's ridiculous.
He was out of control. I was watching. I was like, what is this guy doing? The fact that they had to come on and say, hey, man, read the card. Like we got to get this show going along.
I would be embarrassed if I was that guy. Wouldn't you be embarrassed? Like you're this isn't about you. It's about the kid. Like, you're up there. Nobody cares where you bought your purple coat. Like, nobody cares about that. Like, seriously.
It was suede, like, I believe.
Why does it have to be about you? You know, why does it have to be about you? Like, make it about the kid. This is his moment of his lifetime. Yeah. You know, and nobody wants to hear the tale of your career. Like, there's a time and place for that. I mean, when you're the guest speaker somewhere, share it, but not now. I thought it was horrible. I mean, it was really, like, seriously, he should be embarrassed.
No, it is disappointing that
you know what, though? Guys like that don't get embarrassed. Guys like that don't get embarrassed.
There's no way he's embarrassed. He's walking around saying, I killed that thing right there. Like, it's now the world knows my name.
I gained 10 Twitter followers. I'm so damn happy.
Because Drew Pearson did it way back in the day when the draft was in Philadelphia, I believe it was, when he was rubbing it in, like, five-time world champion Dallas Cowboys. And, like, that I thought was good natured rubbing, because it was in direction of the Eagle fans out there because of the Cowboys-Eagles rivalry. But ever since then, now it has opened the floodgates for any crazy person to go there and just say God knows what before they announce the draft pick.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I mean, you would think it's like now it becomes the Academy Awards. We got to deal with these people that are going up there and they think it's your whole time. Like, seriously, it's not your time.
Yeah, no, it is not their time at all. But it's part of the NFL draft. Hopefully they can just keep it to Saturday one of these years. But Friday, it's gone off the rails. We have jumped the shark. Are you watching anything these days? I know I was watching last night. Winning Time. Have you caught the Lakers dynasty thing on HBO?
I did not watch it last night. Okay. I'm in love with it. I mean the way they look. There's a lot of stories about, to me, what they've done to Jerry West. Now what they're doing to Riley. I don't know what the hell Riley, how it was last night, but to me, they've taken a lot of liberties on this thing that really make people look at in the worst possible way without it. You know, like, if they wanted to do this, they should have kind of changed the names a little bit to protect some of it. But wow. I mean, it's entertaining. I'm enjoying it. I like the way they've shot it in the sense that you feel like you're still in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. No, that I think is very cool. And like how they break the fourth wall, I think, is really an interesting way to produce a television show, because it's just different. It's different than when you normally get there, with the characters staying in character and not talking to the camera or anything like that. Last night's episode,
I'll say, I mean, when Ferris Bueller did that, loved that. That was the best.
Yeah, Ferris Bueller does it in Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Last night's episode, there's a lot of Riley and Westhead, and it's more of like, we're going through the playoffs. So I won't give you any spoilers there, but I was watching that last night. But next week, I'm going to get myself caught up on The Sopranos, though. The draft is over.
Good job. We got to get it, fam.
We're getting caught up. We have the draft over now. We have the NBA playoffs going on, but now we have some days off in the NBA playoffs. So we're going to get caught up on The Sopranos. Sopranos in 60 will return, but Sixers in 60. You feeling good? Game one tonight in South Beach.
No. No, you know I don't feel good about it. You know how that goes. You watched the Sixer game with me. You know, I was convinced they were going to lose Thursday night. They were down by one in the end of the first half, and I don't know where that third quarter came. But, you know, this is, like, to me, this is the perfect example of what I complain about with Doc. Doc Rivers is a Hall of Fame coach, right? Mm-hmm. So he's got all these credentials. He's won a title. But part of coaching is player development, right? And so you say, well, it's unfortunate about Embiid. Right. The unfortunate things happen. You've got to develop your team from within. So now he's got two rookies, Bassey and Reed, basically young players, that he's given no minutes to during the regular season because he was too busy playing DeAndre Jordan. We got to get him signed. You know, we'll play Millsap as opposed to trying to play a guy. You know, Walsh used to say all the time, I would rather lose a game in September playing a young player to win a game in January. Mm-hmm. He was thinking for, because he was about to, but now he needs one of these two young players to come through for him, and they have no minutes. He's done nothing to help him. He said, well, I got to win. Yeah, you can win, but you can also develop. There's a fine line. And if you're not willing to kind of develop a talent, to me, that's the biggest knock on Doc, is everybody can coach Garnett, you know, Ray Allen and Paul Pierce. I mean, that's like, mm-hmm. seriously, that's the mark. The mark is, who have you developed? Any young coach listening to this podcast, it's not about how much you know scheme. It's about who you develop. What player can you develop? Who have you made better today, tomorrow, and the next day? It's player development. That's how you endear yourself to players. That's why players love you.
And I think that wraps up and wraps a nice little bow back to the NFL draft, because once you get drafted, the work is not done. The teams have to develop these guys to have a very good organization. That does it for the show here, Michael. We'll be doing another one, though, Thursday. So we're doing another double up this week, then we'll be back to our regular every Thursday, every week here in the offseason. But always good chatting with you. It's always a pleasure. Thank you to DraftKings. Thank you to VSiN. Thank you to our producer, Stephen Bond. Thank you to all our listeners to subscribe, rate, and review. As always, Michael, I'll talk to you soon, man.
Thanks, Femi. Thank you, Stephen Bond.
Look, we've all been there when we've had to make a tough decision in a short amount of time. I mean, if you're trying to go out and get tickets to a concert or to a football game and it's last minute, you're trying to get the best deal, you don't know where to look, and you ultimately end up on a decision that's a little bit lackluster. Well, our friends at ZipRecruiter take that out of the hiring process. When you want the best, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. It's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast, and right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. I mean, ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for that position. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/shuffle. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Lots of things are better together. Hockey, food, golf, or a nice cold one on a warm spring day hanging out on the deck. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.